And good afternoon and welcome to Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet. I'm here in the studio with the late Patty Fink, who's here just in time for last week's show.
I was out of town last weekend.
Oh, is that where you were? So are you here to interview Lynn Scherr or Nell Gaither?
Nell Gaither.
Oh, okay. Nell so Gaither. You're just going to skip last week's show, which puts you just a few minutes behind for this week.
Exactly. I got to catch up.
Laurent is at home. His grandmother died just a couple of days ago.
And our thoughts are with you, Laurent.
Yeah. We have Josh Maness and Chris Maness at the board. And Doc is recording for us, so if you're listening and miss part of this show, you can always go back to our podcast at lambdaweekly.com. Our guest today is Nell Gaither.
Nell Gaither.
I didn't mean to say it quite that way. I'm losing
Sorry
my
to
voice.
Get you all choked up.
You know, it's his rain. It's his rain. It always has this effect on me. Nell is the president and CEO and executive director and assistant director and secretary and treasurer of Trans Pride Initiative, aren't you?
Except for the treasurer part.
I
don't do that
part. There's no money. Desperate need for it, but the Trans Pride Initiative is an organization that you started about a year ago.
Actually, we started 3 years ago, August 2011, but the first year I was still working at the library and so didn't have a lot of time to really develop it. And so I left the library June of 2012 and have been doing it full-time now for 2 years.
Let's talk about a couple of things that you've done. Just before the show, we were talking a little bit about a couple of housing discrimination complaints, and you're involved in those. What kind of complaints have there been?
Well, actually, it's only one housing and one restroom, but we do have one housing discrimination complaint that we filed maybe 2 months ago now, and this was related to a transitional housing provider here in Dallas who had denied access to a trans woman. And so it was a very good opportunity to go ahead and file a complaint because I was on the phone with them when they made the comments. We were having a group conversation about accessing this program. And it's also an opportunity because we have a little bit of acceptance at emergency shelters, but it's very difficult for trans women to get affirming housing in transitional programs, meaning programs that transition you from an emergency shelter situation into more stable, steady housing longer term. So these are kind of programs that move you in that direction.
So what was the actual complaint?
The actual complaint was that these were shared rooms and she was denied access to one of the rooms because she was trans. That is, they told her, well, you have to have a whole room to yourself. You cannot share it with somebody else. And there was a specific reason given, which is why we're filing the complaint, because it was a reason on assumed surgery and anatomy. And so for that reason, and this was even, she had gotten there to the shelter, and several people had been given rooms in this program who had gotten there at the same time or after her. And they were actually asking her, when are you getting a room? You can come up and share a room with me. Mm-hmm. And there was no issue from anyone in the program. It was the administrators of the program who decided not to allow her to share a room with somebody.
And specifically, it seems, whatever transpired there, that it was because she was trans.
Because she was trans, yes.
Wow. Right, and so it's not even that there was a hesitancy, ooh, I don't want her as my roommate. It was, hey, you can share a room with me, and they're denying her.
From the information that I had, and we'll see, because part of the process of investigating the complaint is the Fair Housing Office goes out and interviews people. So when they interview the complainant, they're going to get from her names of other people who they should interview who are staying there, and that should come out in the complaint investigation process.
Okay. We've had this ordinance for about 10 years, unlike other cities where it's brand new.
12 years now.
Mm-hmm. Other cities like San Antonio and Houston, it's brand new. we haven't had a whole lot of complaints, really. I mean, anybody can file one, but really over a dozen years haven't had a whole lot of complaints.
It's like 54 complaints, right, over 10 to 12 years?
Do you know, it's something like that, and I don't know the exact number right now, but it's something
it
like
that. It had been averaging 6 or 7 a year.
Which isn't a lot for a city of over 1 million people.
Could be a very indicate a very good thing that there are no complaints to be made. Or it could be that people aren't aware that they could make a complaint, mm-hmm. or they're afraid to make a complaint.
And I think that last point points out a real problem with this kind of administrative solution to problems like discrimination, because administrative solutions where you go through a complaint process, those are more available to people who have the time and the money and the are used to accessing things like that. So the people
and have a place to live,
and they're not worrying about that.
Yeah.
At the same time, they're trying to file a complaint. Yeah, you have to have a certain amount of privilege to file a complaint or to feel like you have access to that procedure. So the people who probably most need to file the complaints are probably not accessing
it.
Something like this, yeah. if that
right.
makes sense.
Right. Yeah. In your world of 100% pie, there's not a very big slice available to focus on a process that's going to take a long time. I mean, you're worried about where you're going to sleep tonight, where you're going to eat, where you're going to, chase
right.
those things. And
you're not looking 2 months, 3 months, four
right.
months down the line.
Okay, so the other complaint is a bathroom complaint, and we know that all trans people do is go to the bathroom constantly. That's all you people are doing. You're going to the bathroom and annoying the rest of us by going to the bathroom.
And that is why, because we so focus on bathroom, that is why, because we don't go to the bathroom enough, we have measurable differences in urinary tract infections, bladder infections, kidney problems in the trans community.
And this is one of the things that I've had a number of trans people say to me is one of the biggest problems that they never expected when they transitioned is you're out in public and all you want to do is go to the bathroom and you're afraid to, and so you hold it till you get home, and that's what causes these problems.
Right.
Okay, so what's the bathroom complaint?
Well, this is a complaint against a large international property management company that's headquartered in Houston, of all places, which just passed their equal rights ordinance. And they own properties worldwide. And one of their properties is here in downtown Dallas. And an employee of one of the companies leasing in this property was, when she did her social transition at work, she was told a complaint was filed against her by another tenant of the property. And that was taken to the property manager at that building, who told her she had to go use a unisex bathroom 5 floors down. So she started doing that as a temporary procedure 3 months ago. 2 months ago, I think, something like that. And while they tried to work it out between the property management company and the employer, but I'm not exactly sure what happened between the conversations between the employer and the property management company, but somebody's lawyer is telling somebody somewhere along the line that it's okay to require this person to go to a bathroom on a different floor and to not use the women's bathroom. So when she got kind of a final word that this is not going away from her bosses, which came from the property management company, we decided to go ahead and file the complaint, and that was about a month ago. And for Fair Housing Office did find they have jurisdiction. They've sent the complaint out to the property manager to respond, and that's the last that I've heard. I think they were supposed to respond at the end of last week.
That awful noise that just went into the mic here, that's the emergency broadcasting system. It's raining.
Got it.
Okay.
Everybody out there, it's raining.
Everybody out there needs to panic. You need to panic now. It's raining. Since like the middle of the night, it's telling us now.
They're on top of it.
They are on top of it. At least that awful buzz didn't go off on our heads, because as bad as it sounds at home, it's 10 times worse in the studio. We're talking to Nell Gaither. She is the founder of Trans Pride Initiative, which works on a variety of trans issues and making things better for the trans community. We're talking about several complaints that have been filed. And one of the things that, you know, I said it as a joke when I was really asking you, you know, why are you trans people so focused on going to the bathroom? It's not the trans community that's focused on it. It's other people who, God knows what they think other people do when they go to the bathroom. But most people, you have to pee.
Period. And that's the focus of it for most people, I think.
I certainly don't try to go to the a restroom just for, you know, joys and kicks. I'm going in there either to wash my hands, get at a restaurant maybe before I eat, mm-hmm. or to, you know, to go do your business.
Mm-hmm.
And
now, it's interesting.
It's a business doing kind of place.
It's interesting that the complaints that have gone on in both San Antonio and Houston before the passage of their non-discrimination ordinances. Houston just last month. San Antonio was like last September.
Well, let's just caution. That's a preemptively, we should say, a vision of complaints, because they're not based in any truth.
Oh, of course not.
They're not actual cases. It's just they think this is going to be a problem, so they're complaining about it now.
But the complaints and the protests that they had were all focused on this idea that trans people have nothing better to do. They're not even worried about trans people so much. They're worried about these imaginary men who will dress up as women, go into men's rooms. Now, they don't have a single instance of this documented anywhere. We've had this law on the books 12 years. Nell, how many times have people been arrested for doing this?
At last count, it was zero.
Okay. and you last checked when? Over the last month or two?
Yeah.
Okay.
We talked to Laura Martin at the Dallas Police Office, Dallas Police Department. I think we would hear if something like that happened.
Okay. So, but we're not quite sure about the last couple of hours. Could have happened.
It could have happened in the last few hours.
But as far as we know, this is never... What is it that they're imagining? I mean, it's such nonsense that these predators who they're imagining are these men who are going to be dressing as women, pretending to be trans. And I guess that's what the scenario is that they're cooking up, because I can't quite follow the story that goes along with it. Where are they getting this garbage from?
I don't really have an answer for that. I don't really know. We do know it works when somebody's trying to defeat a bill. In Miami-Dade last year, that approach to campaigning did defeat their effort to pass non-discrimination resolution. And that was basically what they founded their opposition to, extremely broad in employment and public accommodations and public transit. It was a very broad non-discrimination ordinance, and they basically ran one platform against it. This will allow men to go into women's restrooms. And it had a very comical figure of a man with heavy beard shadow in a crooked wig, and a kid holding its cheeks because it was afraid. It's attacking women and attacking children. Mm-hmm. And it's the same old line of anybody, I guess, that falls out of the standard heteronormative segment of society is a threat and perceived as a threat to folks who do fit in that. And so this is a good, this is an effective way of exercising that power over that threat. That's kind of what I think.
I kind of think it's a form of trans panic.
And that too.
Mm-hmm. You know, we've been talking for years about this idea of some sort of gay panic defense. Like, oh, they came on to me, so I had to kill them. Mm-hmm. You know, that it's this preemptive thing, like, oh, this might happen, and so therefore I have to discriminate against you because this might happen.
I think it's one other thing, too. When we passed our ordinance, people who were against the ordinance came in, they spoke, they sat down, they shut up, our side came in, and then the council voted, and they passed it. In Houston, you have these nutty pastors, you have these, you know, really...
Well, we had our own nutty pastor. Benham spoke at that.
Sure he did. Yeah, we did have our nutty pastors. Okay, but there wasn't this big demonstration outside. People weren't arrested. It didn't rise to the level of nonsense and national news that Houston's and San Antonio's did. I think one of the reasons is because they're losing so badly on same-sex marriage. Okay, well, let's find a different group to attack now.
I think that's true with, like, the Family Research Council right. and mm-hmm. some others who have really gone out of their way to make up crap mm-hmm. about the trans community. Mm-hmm. And I mean, literally, out of nothing. Make up crap.
So congratulations,
like
Mel.
At the school, elementary school that happened earlier.
Yeah, I mean, it happens all over the country.
Mm-hmm. This was where, I don't remember exactly, but it was a story about a young trans woman student who is going to the women's bathroom, and there was something that was totally fabricated about her, and it wound up, the school supported her, but there was this totally fabricated story not by Family Research, what is it, Family Research Institute?
Council.
Not by them, but by a similar group.
Like American Families. There's a whole bunch.
Well,
of
the other thing they do is when we get sick of hearing of one of them, they make up another
right.
group to label it
right.
under.
But that wound up causing her a lot of grief. But then when it was investigated, I think Kristen Williams out of Houston did some investigation where she actually called the school, talked to the principal, talked to the student, and found out none of this really happened. It was totally a fabricated story.
Yeah, and they're getting away with it.
Let's see, when you go and get the truth about a story, it's usually not this garbage that is out there.
Right.
People for the American Way just did a study, and they found that they went through this whole list of stupid stories about the gay community. And, you know, it just goes on and on about these idiotic things that happen. And then they said, it's really, these are terrible things. Unfortunately, none of them ever happened. You know, that's their report.
You are listening to KNON 89.3 FM in Dallas and Fort Worth, the voice of the people.
You feel petrified. You're struggling with your mortgage payments, not knowing what to do. You do nothing. But if you do something, you're far more likely to get the most positive outcome. Making Home Affordable is a free government program. Call 888-995-HOPE to talk one-on-one with a housing expert about your options. Call 888-995-HOPE or visit makinghomeaffordable.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Treasury, HUD, and the Ad Council.
This is Lewis from UT Arlington, and I listen to Lambda Weekly podcasts at lambdaweekly.com.
People haven't known.
And welcome back to Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with the late Patty Fink, or the almost on time Patty Fink.
Hey, I got here.
Well, had you had that warning from the emergency broadcast system, you would have known it was raining.
I think it was me who called it in on my way over.
Ah, thank you.
Because, you know, I had to take a different route and stuff because it was raining.
And you had to reach down and turn on the windshield wipers.
I did.
Remember where they were?
Yeah. It was quite the panic there. You know, am I going to make it? Am I going to make it?
I'm sure it was. We're talking to Nell Gaither today. She is the founder of Trans Pride Initiative. They're involved in a number of different trans issues. One of the things that you've done is you've started a program called the Shared Housing Program to take care of a need in the trans community that really wasn't being addressed. Tell us what that program is.
Well, Shared Housing is a program where you can register online and you can actually look through non-personal identifying information about registrants online. And the purpose is to match people who have rooms available or houses available to people who need rooms or houses. And it can work so that somebody owns a house or is buying a house and they have an extra room that they'll rent to somebody or they'll make available for free to somebody. It can be two people looking for a room or a house, and we try to match them up if they both looks like they might pair together. Basically, we take registrations and we just look at how can we fit this together to make it work for somebody, and then approach different people and say, what do you think about this person? What do you think about this person? And try to get them connected, and then TransPride steps out of it and lets them work out the details of the sharing arrangement.
Why in the trans community is this such a special need?
Well, one example is that first Fair Housing Office complaint where there was somebody who was denied transitional housing. Right now, there's really no consistent transitional housing program in Dallas that a trans person can access. The problem's also bad for group homes in Dallas, very bad for group homes. And in fact, one of our registrants in the Shared Housing Project is somebody currently living in a group home in a very bad situation. So that's one of the things we're trying to get her out of there. There's not a consistent access for trans persons to transitional housing programs. So we wanted to figure out, well, how's some way that we can work around the system and provide a different kind of access?
Let's go back a couple of steps, though, and some people listening might not really understand what are some of the circumstances that get people into this situation where all of a sudden they're just in a need for transitional or assisted or something housing, that they're not just going on with their lives and just taking off from there.
Well,
and you only have 15 minutes to talk about it.
Right.
Exactly.
This is a very big topic.
It's a huge topic.
That's a huge topic, but I think I can kind of just condense it into a few things, and that's when for younger folks who are gender nonconforming or trans, they may lose their family. They may get kicked out of their homes, and so they wind up on the street. For persons who are gender nonconforming or trans, they may lose their job because in Texas, now Dallas does have protections against being fired because you're trans, but there's lots of ways to find the means of letting
you
somebody
still might go. Lose your job. You it's still just that the employer is going to pay a fine.
Right.
Or they come up with some other
reason. Sure. And that's pretty easy to do, actually. Or if they're trans, they may not be able to find work, and so they've been staying with friends. But any of those situations, especially for somebody younger, can result in a situation where it's not often that you're technically homeless in the sense of living on the street, although there certainly are trans people on the street and in our shelters. But this can also be a situation where you're sleeping on the couch with friends or maybe other family members, not your immediate family, but other family members.
Or sleeping in your car.
And we have registrants that are in all of those situations, living in their car, living with friends, couch surfing. It can also be such as one person that registered recently had some medical issues. That wound up ending his job. He's a trans man, ending his job. And being in the hospital, he couldn't meet the needs of his job, and then taking a lot of his funding also, or his personal funds, so that he wound up with just not enough money to be able to rent a place. He's now staying with a friend until he can get stable, back on his feet, and then he can go ahead and rent a house again. So it's a temporary situation.
I would think for a number of trans people, it's difficult to go back to work as the opposite gender, whereas if you're starting
a different gender,
whereas if you've been thinking about it for years and you're just starting a new job, that's a perfect time for the transition. So that some people who are changing jobs might not be in the same economic position, and just for the first time they're transitioning, they've lost a spouse. So they're alone, and something like this is perfect because, okay, I can team up with somebody, we can rent an apartment together. It's just easier to do. So I would think a number of people who would be in a real tight position without something like this, when you have somebody else to share it with, you're just in a better position. So I would think it would help not just the people who are out on the street, but people who are just in a new situation.
Right. And this program is not meant necessarily just to address problems with people who are out of housing or living in their car or something. It is also for people like that, and we want to address all of the housing issues and serve as that kind of access facilitator, I guess you could call it also. And in fact, somebody who applied to us a few weeks ago, she was in that kind of position. She actually works for herself, but her rent had gone up. She felt like she could no longer afford it. She applied to see if there was somebody else for a roommate sharing thing. She wound up finding somebody else on her own, but I think once this program grows, it could be a good access point for people in exactly that situation where they just need a change of how they're living because they're in some sort of transition, not necessarily a gender transition, but they're in a transition in their life in some way, and they need that access to trans-affirming housing.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's important, too. I mean, you're really kind of a sophisticated bulletin board. You know, with the next card's up, and you just put yours up there and say, how do we match?
Well, and that's exactly what I was thinking of when I did this, is we no longer have crossroads to go down there and put up on the bulletin board, hey, I'm looking for a roommate. This is the modern version of that. Mm-hmm. And it's meant to serve that purpose, as well as more of trying to meet the needs of somebody who's homeless. And we do collect on our registration for people who are applying, their home seekers, as we call them. We collect some information about how long you've been homeless, whether you've are a survivor of violence, and some other pieces of information, so that if I know other programs they can access, I can contact them and say, well, yeah, this we can do this on your housing, but I noticed you put this down. You may be able to access this program. And so as I learn more about programs like that that could help them in other ways, then that's also a purpose of this. Anything to get stability back in their lives.
Sure. And I think it's this is a great place, too, if you have room available or you need someone else to share your home. And it could be a person who is, active in the LGBT community or has friends in the LGBT, but it doesn't necessarily require that.
It doesn't at all.
If you have an elder parent, they have an open, available room, and they need somebody to come and go from their home and be around, they could maybe work out something to share a room.
Exactly. No, but what about the bathroom?
Well, you know, maybe they have more than one bathroom.
And most home bathrooms are unisex these days.
Oh.
Yes, yes.
Oh. Well, being gay and only living with other gay people, I just don't
You're
even,
so used to those gay bathrooms.
I am. I just don't know how these bathrooms work for all of the other people.
So. But if you have a home and you have room available, or you have a property that is going to be vacant for a period of time, and you want somebody to occupy it, this might be a great way to
That would be a great way. And also something about this program is applying for the program does not require you to participate in any way. You fill out the application. If there's somebody that matches you, then I get in touch with you to try to work that out. But there's no requirement that you give somebody a home within a certain amount of time or
at all.
It's just you fill out the application, and that gives you the opportunity to participate. And something I'd like to do in the future is have mixers or some kind of social for everybody who's applied can come out and just meet each other. And nobody knows whether, you know, they're a home seeker or a home provider, but it's an opportunity for people to get to know each other.
A match might
happen out of that?
Just happen. Mm-hmm. And when we're talking about a match here, we're not talking about dating. We're just talking about just people meeting each other who might share some housing with each other.
It's mutually beneficial housing arrangements. Yeah.
If somebody is interested, how do they get in touch with you?
Well, they can write to me at nell@tpride.org, so that'd be TPRIDE.org, or we have a friendly URL that will always point to whatever our main housing page is, and that's tpride.org/DTSH, so Dallas Trans Shared Housing, DTSH.
So tpride.org is what people need to remember to,
and
to
that
get to you.
Yeah, and then you
and
can
they'll get to you.
You can select program or projects, I think it is, and there's the shared housing project on the menus there too.
Okay, because you're not busy enough, what are some of the other things that TransPride is doing?
Like that's not enough. I mean, my gosh.
Well, there are several things that we're working on. So we've got complaints that we filed, and we try to follow up on that. We're involved in the Dallas LGBT task force, and so
That was actually the one I was getting to.
Okay, I thought you might be pointing me toward that.
Well, I was giving you the opportunity to talk about other things too, but that's the one I was thinking of. With the task force, one of the things that's going on now, because Dallas's ordinance is 12 years old, and it's an older ordinance than the non-discrimination ordinance in most cities, there's a problem with some of the language.
Right.
Not just there, but in other places that point to this ordinance. So what's the problem with the language that the task force is working with the city to clean up right now?
Well, we can kind of summarize it in two main things. There's Chapter 34, which is the personnel rules, and the personnel rules don't actually include language. They include some language for non-discrimination, but it's not complete. And so we're going through there to kind of refine the language for non-discrimination toward City of Dallas employees for sexual orientation and gender identity. And so part of that is adding gender identity in there. And something I've noticed about it, and I don't know how this came about, but it seems like the non-discrimination clause only applies to full-time permanent employees.
Oh, interesting.
And I need to look through it more carefully, but I think it would be a good idea to have this apply to all employees, not just those that are full-time and permanent. I think.
So you don't think it's a good idea to discriminate against your temporary or part-time employees? Just want to get this clear.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think we could probably say that.
Okay.
It's probably not a good idea.
And then there's, of course, the big problem. It's one thing to be an employee of the City of Dallas, and you want those full protections, and you want folks who are employed by the city to know they have those protections. But there are a lot more people affected, actually, by the ordinance, the non-discrimination ordinance, that doesn't apply to employees, but it does apply to everybody else living and working in the city. And that is that the definition for sexual orientation is really messed up. The definition includes, homosexuality, bisexuality, heterosexuality, I think it even has asexuality, and then they throw in transgender. And that's not even like an appropriate way to mess up the definition, so it's double messed up. So we want to pull that out and include sexual orientation as its own thing, because it is. Conceptually, it's a completely different thing than gender identity.
That is who you're attracted to, and gender identity is how you identify yourself.
Yes. And so gender identity and expression is a completely separate concept. And so we want to pull those out, for one, so that it's technically correct.
Just to clean up the language.
We want to clean up the language, and we want to make it...
It's in the law that both are protected. It's
right.
Just...
Yeah. And if there are complaints today, and those complaints that have been filed, I mean, there's a legal binding thing there that it does apply to people based on sexual orientation and gender identity, based on the way it's written. It's fine in terms of legal terms, but... For visibility, I mean, every time they reprint anything about it, it gets buried, and trans people and gender nonconforming people may not even see themselves in the ordinance. And so, having it separated is, I think, the proper thing to do. But most importantly, it helps to get the word out to people protected by it that they have those protections. And I think a lot of people don't know.
Right,
they don't know that they're protected.
We just see the language that says sexual orientation, and people think, well, it doesn't cover gender identity.
Right.
But by separating these out, we'll now equalize them and underscore both sexual orientation and gender identity and expression.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Part of the language, or part of the problem with the language in the Houston ordinance and San Antonio ordinance, and this wasn't really, I'm calling it a problem, the problem for religious groups. Let's call them religious. Not my definition of religious when a pastor stands up there and says, well, yes, if you're Jewish, I do think we should be able to discriminate against you.
So we can say religious claiming organizations.
Yeah. But part of the problem was the ordinance itself was so long because it defined discrimination. It defined all kinds of things. The Dallas ordinance is nice, clean, clear cut. You can't discriminate.
But there's a definition, actually, of discrimination.
There's a definition. Okay, but when Adam Medrano was on the show, he was talking about we need to clean that up and be more specific. So where's the happy medium, and what's going to be cleaned up in the ordinance? Do you know?
Like Nell was alluding to, is really kind of going through, you know, both the chapter 34 and 46 with a flea comb, really to find all of those references and balance them for sexual orientation and gender identity expression.
But I'm talking about the definition of discrimination.
I think those are quite adequate. I don't see any major problems with, for example, the non-discrimination ordinance, which is chapter 46, and its other content. I don't know that it's other than really separating those and defining those, I don't think you empower it any more than it already is. And I think the definitions for things are quite adequate, except for sexual orientation, mm-hmm. I think is way off. But have you encountered that sort of thing?
Not really. I mean, I think that's something we need to look through and see mm-hmm. if there are problems like that. But I don't recognize it, and it's fairly thorough in saying in several different places, discrimination means you can't give somebody a different opportunity in terms of advancement or pay or time off. And there's several different ways that it discusses in different sections what discrimination means and what's prohibited. And it seems fairly comprehensive to me in how it discusses those.
I think when you read the language, it's pretty clear that you can't discriminate on any form of hiring practice, promotion, firing practices, all those things, and harassment. I think it's spelled out pretty well.
And even going to something like training, and that's something that in Chapter 46, it covers training specifically. In Chapter 34, training was left out, and it said, well, some other section, one of the attorneys at the City of Dallas said some other section actually covers training, but it's not real clear, and I think we should suggest that training be added to 34 to specifically cover training opportunities. You can't not train somebody because for any reason that might be considered a discriminatory reason.
We're talking to Nell Gaither. She is the founder of Trans Pride Initiative. We'll be back with Nell and more of Lambda Weekly right after this.
You're listening to KNON 89.3 FM in Dallas and Fort Worth, the voice of the people.
Want to find out about upcoming events at KNON? Want to see pictures from past events or need information about the station? Then you need to like the official KNON Facebook page. It's easy to find. Just go to facebook.com/KNON893. It's the KNON 89.3 FM station-produced page for Facebook. It's the easiest way to keep up with what's going on here at KNON. Like us and share with your friends today. That's facebook.com/KNON893. Accept no substitutions.
Hi, I'm Cleve Jones, and you're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM.
Healthcare stuff.
And you're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with the late Patty Fink. Lauren will be back with us next week. We're talking to Nell Gaither. She's the founder of Trans Pride Initiative. There is a
there's a vote coming up on Wednesday at Dallas City Council. And what's interesting about it is if you're not familiar with the city of Dallas and how it's structured, the city has a charter, which is kind of like its constitution. And so the charter says, you know, we are Dallas, we are these things, we are going to do these things, this is how we're going to work, this is how city government will work. And so there's a charter commission that I know Rafael, State Representative Rafael Enchia, who's been a guest on this show many times, was very involved in leadership role. And they're reviewing things to change in the charter. And many things in the charter, anything that goes to the charter has to go to the voter. And so on Wednesday this week at the city council meeting at Dallas City Hall, there are a number of things that are going to go up for a vote, and one of them is some language to update the non-discrimination protected classes listed in the charter as protected. And so there are a number of and amazingly, this charter hasn't been updated in several decades. And so the only things that were previously there were basically race and religion. and gender and sex, as they called it.
Even though religion is a choice?
Even though religion is a choice, exactly. There's a protection to let you have your own,
oh,
however you like. And so there are, so in this litany of things that have to bring it up to speed, really, there will be a thing going before the council to vote this onto the ballot for November, and that will change the or lift the non-discrimination portion of the charter to include race, color, age, religion, gender, marital status, sexual orientation, gender identity and expression, genetic characteristics, national origin, disability, military or veteran status, political opinions or affiliations. And so that entire group is going to be on the ballot to be added to the...
Yeah, I don't know about those veterans.
Right. And disabled people.
You know, disabled people.
With differing abilities. Right. So anyway, that's a really important thing that's going to be happening this week. And then I just wanted to note, we have in this week's Dallas Voice, there's a great article, an interview with the new ethics and diversity officer at Dallas City Hall, Cheryl Orr. And she is
I have not met her.
Yes. Absolutely delightful. And I think she's a really solid pick for this position. I think she was really great. And I just wanted to say, since we have Nell on the show this week, Nell is really the force behind, the impetus behind getting that position established at the City of Dallas and really pushing for that
Well, then
role.
Let's ask her, since we have her available. What is this position, and why is it important for a city to have something like this?
Well, it's the position is the Ethics and Diversity Officer, and so she's going to look at – she's in part defining her own job, as I understand it. We had lunch maybe a week after she got – started here. So she's going around and meeting people and just getting to know how the city works right now. And as I understand it, she is kind of defining the ethics part of it and what needs to be done to improve ethics or to I don't know what.
Make everybody aware
of ethical considerations at the city.
Right.
Yeah.
As they're related to diversity issues.
In all issues.
Just all issues.
Yeah,
all
issues.
Ethical issues.
And then diversity is the other piece, and so...
And she has an enormous background on diversity and HR.
And I agree. She sounds like she's really going to be good. She doesn't know everything yet, but she's really learning. And so I think she is making a great effort, and she's going to be a really staunch ally. So I'm excited about this.
Mm-hmm. And I just want to say, this is really... You know, we had some meetings... there were transitions at City Hall, as we know, in the beginning of the year. We had a new city manager, we had a new city attorney and others, and people from the task force, including Nell and I and others, had met with various people in those positions at City Hall, and Nell really pushed that. And I'm really proud of our city for picking up the mantle and taking that forward, because that was really quickly done. They put together a job opening and interviewed people, and they've made a hire, and it's all been done, I think, very quickly.
A new position created. I mean, you think about the bureaucracy at the city level, and it's nice.
It's just been a few months. And
is this a position that most major cities have?
And most major corporations do, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay. So. Also in this week's Dallas Voice, there was an opinion piece written by – I have to apologize for this, Patty. It's written by you. I have your name wrong. I have you listed as Patty Fink. Instead of the late
that.
Patty Fink.
I think it would have alarmed some readers. Or maybe it would.
I care.
You know, maybe they wouldn't even seen it. I don't know.
Yeah, like I care, it would have alarmed some people. You're talking about the executive...
Well, I think now we just see that as her first name.
So. True.
What you're talking about in your piece is about the executive order versus ENDA. And I'll keep talking now that she's choking.
I'm joking.
You're talking about the executive order that will do what and what won't it do?
Well, there's been some pressure for quite a while for the president to sign an executive order on some sort of employment non-discrimination. And really the only way... The purview that he has to do that is for federal contract employees of federal contractors and subcontractors. And so he did that because it's pretty clear that the Congress is not going to move on ENDA. It passed in the Senate, but it hasn't even gotten any intention.
Well, Boehner already said it's not coming to the House.
Yeah, it's not going to happen. And we've been working on this since the 70s. And so it's been decades and decades.
What's the rush?
Right, right. It's just non. It's only just been 30 years. That's all.
40 years.
So he's stated he hasn't signed it yet, but he's directed his staff to draw together an executive order that would protect the employees of federal contractors and subcontractors based on sexual orientation and gender identity. And so we'll see that coming about. I know that there are some leaders in the LGBT community have been invited to talk with administration staff who are tasked with this project and get to give their input and feedback. And so there will be forthcoming, I would presume soon, an executive order that the president has vowed to sign. So that's coming up, and so we'll see what happens. Mm-hmm. But I kind of address in there that it's a double-edged sword, the executive order versus ENDA, mm-hmm. and so that's available in the Dallas Voice.
Okay. So, do you think that the executive order will push Congress though a little bit toward a little bit closer to passing ENDA, or do you think?
Well, there's so many problems with the whole concept. One, the bill is written, I think, is really awful, and I kind of talk about that a lot in the mm-hmm. opinion piece. But I think it's really bizarre that in a country today where like 80% of the country supports workplace protections for LGBT employees, and in 29 states you could be fired for being gay, and in 32 states you could be fired for being trans. Mm-hmm. And yet over 70% of the country believes we already have these protections. I can't tell you how many people like on Twitter and Facebook were saying, we already have rules, laws that cover this. Why are we doing this?
Even doing like going down and talking to state representatives and things, they say, we don't already have this,
right? Sometimes. And they're shocked that it's right. perfectly fine to fire people mm-hmm. in all of these places. And so, I think it's shocking with that level of support and people who think it's already there that it's so difficult to get this passed. It's so bizarre to me.
Now, that's just employment protection, and most people really feel that. You know, even Rick Perry came out this week and said
he came out.
No, he didn't come out this week. He came out and said. Yeah, he's never going to come out, and we don't really want him to because we'd have to welcome him into our community.
He could go live in another state.
Well, he's planning on it. After he leaves office, he's planning on moving to California, he just said. That's a good advertisement for companies to move here when he goes.
Once and when he leaves?
Yeah. Anyway, that's just employment, and most people agree you do your job, you should be able to keep your job. There's a new poll out. 56% of Americans support marriage equality. 37% oppose it. 44% of Americans strongly support marriage equality. Only 28% strongly oppose it. So, 9% who oppose it, they're against it. That's kind of how they stand on it. 3% would protest a Supreme Court decision legalizing marriage equality across the country. So there are only 3% that this is really that important to keep couples from getting married.
That's like 9 million people. But I didn't see 9 million people in Washington this week. Did you?
At the
March for Marriage?
The March for Marriage, it was called. There were dozens of people there. Dozens of people stood out in front
sparse.
Of the Capitol. Yeah. Here's the statistic that I thought was really interesting about marriage. 74% of Americans say that marriage equality will not affect them. Doesn't mean that 26% say I'm against it. 26% of that 26%, they're saying it will affect me. Mm-hmm. Like you and I, or all three of us, are saying, yeah, marriage equality will affect us. In a positive way. Mm-hmm. So of the 74% who are saying it won't affect them, that includes some people who strongly oppose it. Oh, it won't affect me. So why are you so strongly opposing it?
Right, right.
What and is it that you're opposing?
And it also says a lot about, I think, that 26% about how many LGBT people there are and their families and friends and people who care. Because it does affect me. My cousin and her partner are going to marry in a couple of weeks in San Francisco, mm-hmm. and I'm going to officiate, by the way. Affects me. Their marriage affects me because I am now supporting them in their marriage. you know, and so I think that's really important. I think family and friends really are part of that mix. So 26%, can you imagine what percentage of that when they finally ask the question or we finally get some, you know, believable numbers about how many of us there are? There's a lot of us, and there's a lot of people who care about us and love us.
Sure.
So,
yeah, and marriage equality also, it's a trans issue.
It's a trans issue because trans persons are gay and lesbian and bi and pan and agender and
straight.
And then sometimes live in a state where they're not recognizing the transition, so even though you're living as a trans person, a straight trans person, you can't get married then because the birth certificates don't match.
That's a possibility, yeah. It's more complicated for trans persons.
Whereas if we had marriage equality and a person could just marry another person, it's no longer an issue.
Right.
Kind of moot.
So,
it's not just a gay and lesbian issue. It's also a big e-trans issue, too. Because there are some places like Texas where actually they're trying to get it so that you can't marry anybody. Well, in a couple of these recent cases, you know, with Greg Abbott, he wants it both ways, that no, you can't marry the opposite sex because you're actually the same sex, but now that you've transitioned to the to a different gender, but you used to be, and so we still can't.
Yeah.
I mean, he doesn't know what he thinks on this issue. He just is against, which is the
position. He's had a lot of problems this week. I think it's really interesting, too. There's a big hoopla, you know, of course, recently with the state convention of the Texas GOP in Fort Worth.
Well, what was wrong with their platform?
They have, of course, this platform that vilifies us still, just says it differently, and also says that reparative therapy is a good thing, and they recommend it. It's been banned in several states as harmful, especially to minors. But I think it's really interesting that Greg Abbott has decided that he won't say whether he supports that platform or not. He just has his own. He says, I've got my own platform. So he's completely dodged it. But the head of the party, the chair of the Texas Republican Party, has denounced the reparative therapy plank.
Several prominent folks have denounced it, in there.
Yeah, and it's their party. And the young Republicans have rejected the entire platform.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's bizarre. It's just bizarre.
And Rick Perry has rejected his own statements.
Rick Perry, yes. He's,
okay, so Rick Perry...
He knows how to walk backwards.
You know, and chew gum. Rick Perry was on the air comparing gays to alcoholics. The only thing he meant by it was they're both genetic. That might be an advance for him, because what he's doing by saying that he thinks it's genetic is he's saying he does believe in science.
Well, that's kind of scary. I'm not sure he realizes he might be saying that. Maybe that's why he walked it back.
Maybe. So he wasn't really comparing the two as the same. He doesn't think you should be arrested while driving gay.
Or go to a GA meeting?
Well, that would
QA
be
meeting?
That would be reparative that therapy that would have you go to a But now he said, here's his statement, and this is from Rick Perry, so it sounds sane. I got asked about issues, and instead of saying, you know, what we need to be is a really respectful and tolerant country to everybody, and get back to talking about whether you're gay or straight, you need to be having a job. And those are the focuses that I want to be involved with.
Yeah.
So now he supports Texas INDA, I guess.
That's what I heard.
Well, that's what I'm hearing from this. That everybody needs to have their job, and you need to be
whether you're gay or straight.
Gay or straight, you need.
Yeah. That's bizarre.
But that came out of Rick Perry's mouth. Do you think, once again, he has no idea what was coming out of his mouth at the time? Or were these words put into his mouth? Or is this what he really believes? And the other one, what's going on?
Well, let's see. I think he's running for president, so he'll say anything. And he did it before. Or nothing, in which case he follows it with an oops.
Or anything that he's told he's supposed to say.
Yep. And there, you know, there's some indications too from inside his camp that they felt like that was one of only three strikes he'll ever have for his 2016 run.
What are the other two?
Which is kind of serious. Oh, yeah, the other two are yet to come, but they
and one of them is I forgot. So
exactly.
He really only gets two strikes,
right?
You won't be able to remember the thing.
Yeah, he has a strike from last time that's kind of not going to go away.
Yeah, that one's not going to go away. So I think with strike two here, he's out. Nell, thank you for being with us.
You're welcome.
Yeah, come back and anytime.
And that brings us to the end of another Lambda Weekly. We'll be back next week with more Lambda Weekly. I'm trying to think who our guest is next week. I have it written down, I think, somewhere. We'll post it on our Facebook page. You can always find us on Facebook. Josh, Christopher, thank you for running the board. Nell, this is our split personality board operator.
Josh,
and Doc, thank you for running the tape. If you missed any part of the show or want to see one of our previous shows, you can always catch them online because Doc is here recording them every week. For all of us here at Lambda Weekly, have a good week.